Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana, what I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
And good morning. Welcome to the Hoosier Report here on WXVW. Lee Kelly sitting in for Matt Dennison on this Thursday morning, October the 18th. Glad you're along with us this morning. Our guest lineup today presented by Honey Baked Ham. In our segment one, we'll have headlines and news of the day. And then in segment two, we have Alex Bozich inside the hall. And segment three, Matt Weaver, Pigs.com IU football writer. Alex Bozich, presented by CC Power Sports. And Matt Weaver, and the headlines and news of the day presented by Hoopsters Sports Grill. Glad you're along with us. The Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Get $1 off your box lunch if you mention the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Save yourself a dollar. Glad you're along with us this morning. Let's take a look at some of the headlines out there on this Thursday. IU back in action this Saturday afternoon at 3:30. They'll travel to Penn State, try to right the ship, but it won't be easy. Penn State smarting from back-to-back home losses. They are looking forward, I'm sure, to IU making their way to town this coming Saturday. Indiana had a team meeting earlier this week, and they're hoping to get things turned around before this season goes any further. We'll talk with Matt Weaver about all of those items on the IU football side. That'll be coming up just a little bit later in segment three on the program today. Well, the trial, which has rocked college basketball, is nearing completion, but a bit of a bombshell. Zion Williamson's father and Duke were mentioned as someone who might have been looking for a little bit of a handout. Apparently, the father wanted a job, a house, and six-digit figured payoff. For his son to come to school somewhere. So we'll see how that works out. Interesting that Duke's head coach, Coach K, saying on Monday that it's just a blip, that really not a whole, or actually a whole lot of nothing going on in college basketball as far as the way players are recruited. We'll see how that comes out. We'll talk to Alex Bozich about that a little bit as well. Romeo Langford on the Jerry West watch list before his very first college game, getting a lot of honors before he ever puts up his first shot. And that is good news for all of the Romeo fans, and there are a ton of them out there along with all the IU fans looking forward 2 weeks from tonight, an exhibition game and one that will kick off the 2018-19 season. And as far as high school football goes, the regular season now in the rearview mirror. And we're ready for sectional play. Some good games on tap for Friday night. A few teams off. They drew byes and won't play until week two. We'll talk about that coming up in just a moment. Hoopsters is your hometown sports grill where hometown fans watch hometown teams play. Hoopsters was voted as best sports bar and best place to watch sports by the News and Tribune's Reader's Choice Awards. Hoopsters in Jeffersonville, where fun happens. You know, you talk about the IU football program, and it just seems, and it's interesting to me, that When Wisconsin and Northwestern and Iowa and other schools in the Big Ten like that can find ways to consistently win and get to good bowl games, Indiana struggles year after year with that. Exactly why, I don't know. And we are going to ask that of Matt Weaver when we talk a little later in the program. But, you know, you think back, and if you're old enough, like me, you think back to that 1967 season, the year that Indiana ended up playing in the Rose Bowl. It was actually New Year's Day, 1968. Started off the season 9-0. They actually lost that Rose Bowl game 14-3. The star running back and the most valuable player, O.J. Simpson, playing for USC. But what a year that was, and it certainly got the IU fans fired up. It is the only Rose Bowl IU played in. Three sophomores whose names will forever be remembered fondly by IU fans: Harry Gonzo, the quarterback, Jade Butcher, a receiver, and John Eisenbarger, best known for being the punter on the team and best known for not punting but taking off on fourth down, not necessarily making it the majority of the time, but it prompted buttons that were handed out along with posters that said, "Punt, John, punt." Part of that mystique that came about in 1967 really hasn't been seen a lot since then. It is kind of interesting that these schools, some of those schools in the Big Ten, can win when they're really not in states that produce a great deal of talent, find a way to win year after year. We'll check into that a little bit later. The trial of college basketball continues, as we said, and Zion Williamson, the new name to pop out. Apparently, there are a lot of phone conversations and text messages that are sealed by the judge because they have no bearing on the current case. Waiting to see if those will come out, who will be named, what popular names will pop up, and if the head coaches at some of these elite schools have managed to insulate themselves well enough to where the assistant coaches will take the fall, if indeed anyone does, or whether they actually will be drawn into the mess. Indiana freshman Romeo Langford, one of 20 preseason watch list members for the 2019 Jerry West Shooting Guard of the Year Award. Langford, a preseason All-Big Ten honoree, enters the college level. He was the fourth leading scorer in Indiana high school history with 3,002 points, two-time Prep All-American, and considered the number five player nationally. Langford and Nebraska's James Palmer Jr. are the only two Big Ten players selected to that preseason watch list. And it is named, actually, that award is named after 1980 Hall of Famer, 1959 NCAA Final Four Most Valuable Player Jerry West. The annual honor is in its fifth year and recognizes the top shooting guards in Division I men's college basketball. 20 players on there. Going down the list, as we said, just two from the Big Ten made that list. And Thursday, we start talking about football. Friday night, we find that sectional play begins this Friday, and here are the games locally. Columbus East will travel to New Albany. It is their second trip to play the Bulldogs at the Bulldogs' home field, Burke Field, Friday night. Last time, it was a one-point game. We'll see which team has improved the most, and we'll move on into the second round of the sectional. Silver Creek should have an easy time at Scottsburg. Scottsburg in a rebuilding year. Charlestown and their star running back will move to Salem on Friday night to play. Switzerland County comes to Clarksville to meet Providence. And Mitchell plays at Clarksville High School. Eastern Green will play at Rock Creek. So those are the games lined up for Friday night. A lot of things going on. We'll be talking with Alex Bozich and Matt Weaver coming up in our next two segments and find out more about a lot of those things we've talked about. So We're going to take our first break of the day, and when we come back, we'll talk with Alex Bozich, find out a little bit about IU basketball. There's a new player, top 40, that's going to visit Indiana. We'll talk about that as well as some of the other information going on. We'll be back on the Hoosier Report after these messages.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a f*** what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And welcome back. Again, Lee Kelly subbing for Matt Dennison today and tomorrow. Thanks to Matt for allowing me to come in, sit in for him. Our next guest, Alex Bozich of Inside the Hall, presented by CC Power Sports. CC Power Sports with two locations serving Indiana and Kentucky, one in Clarksville. The mothership, so to speak, carries Indian, Victory, Slingshot, Polaris, Can-Am, Sea-Doo, Honda, KTM, Yamaha, Kawasaki, and Suzuki. The Louisville store right off I-65 in southern Jefferson County carries Kawasaki, Can-Am, Sea-Doo, Yamaha, and Suzuki. New riders are welcome, and racers are welcome. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning, Mr. Kelly. How are you doing?
So far, so good, but the day's very, very young. We'll see how it goes. All right, let's start off a little bit. First of all, are you surprised by all of the publicity and honors that Romeo is receiving before he ever takes that first jump shot?
No, not really. I mean, this is one of the biggest stories, I feel like, nationally in college basketball this year is Indiana getting Romeo into the program. Obviously, we were kind of in our little bubble here with a triangle of Louisville, Kentucky, and Indiana, so we hear about it a lot. But I think more than usual nationally, people have kind of taken notice of this story just because of how decorated of a career Romeo had as a high school player in what's really regarded as one of the best states in the country for high school basketball. So people take notice of that. It's not like you're talking about a kid coming from a different area to play at IU. This is a big deal, not only because of how good Romeo is and how good of a high school player and how talented he is, but I think also the fact that he's from Indiana, I think that resonates with people from around the country. And people see that last season Indiana was probably a score away from being a pretty good team, and they figure that Romeo is going to come in and fill that void from day one. And so he's going to have every opportunity to do so. So I'm not surprised at all that he's getting all this preseason attention. I do wonder a little bit if it's a little bit too much, just in terms of what people are expecting. But I think the good thing about Romeo is I don't necessarily think any of that's going to bother him or affect how he performs and plays on a game-to-game basis. I think he's going to have his games where he looks like a freshman, but I think he's also going to have his games where you say, wow, this kid is really good, like we've seen over his four-year career at New Albany.
Yeah, I agree. And I've never seen pressure bother him that you can tell anyway. So if anybody can handle it, I think he is the one, and I'm certainly glad that he is getting all of this recognition, and New Albany High School as well getting that recognition. A new player, yep, at least new to me, announced that he is going to visit Indiana, Caleb Love, a top 40 player. Do we know much about this young man?
He's a 2020 kid, so kind of a long way to go with him, but he's one of the guys that Indiana's kind of prioritized early in the 2020 class. The one thing about that group, and I've talked about this before with Matt, and I'm sure you've been on when we've talked about this as well, is more so than in 2018 and in 2019, with 2018, obviously, you got Robert Fennessy, Demise Anderson, and Romeo coming in from in-state. In 2019, Indiana hopes to have Trace Jackson Davis and Keon Brooks. 2020, in-state talent pool not really as deep, and so they're going to have to kind of go outside, I think, to get players. And Caleb Love is a kid that they've identified early as someone that they want to get. I believe he's from the St. Louis area, so not too far away. Archie Miller's talked a lot about kind of recruiting that Big Ten footprint, and while that may not be specifically the Big Ten footprint, he's close enough to where you can get him on campus for a visit. And I think more than anything else, Indiana's going to have to kind of be creative with their 2020 recruiting efforts and look outside of the area for kids. And I think he's one of the best available in the Midwest. And so I'm not surprised they're going to have him on campus for a visit. And it sounds like everything in terms of his interest in the program is pretty significant at this point, but still a long way to go with the 2020 kids. Good for them, I think, at this point to take visits, see different campuses, and then as things go along down the line, have more information so that when it does come time to make that decision, they are comfortable with it. But Caleb Love is a name I think we're going to be talking about here a lot over the next year or so until he can sign next fall.
It sounds good. Always good when you can get players to take a visit to your school, I would think.
And right.
Especially
yep.
this early in his recruiting process to be mentioned. So
good yeah, things. For sure.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the trial going on that a few people have heard about. A little bit of a surprise, I think, in that Zion Williamson's father apparently they have a wiretap of him wanting a job, a house, and a six-figure bonus for his son to go to school somewhere, not directly attributed to Duke in any way, shape, or form, but still has to cast a little bit of a cloud over that school and that whole situation.
Yeah, it's, I think, going to be an interesting year to come with all of this. Just to see what the NCAA does, because I don't think that they're going to be any more capable. In fact, I know they're not going to be more capable than what the FBI is of producing any evidence or getting people to talk. And so I think what we're seeing play out right now in court is basically the information that we're going to get. And so from here, I think the next question becomes is how swiftly is the NCAA going to act on some of these situations? Are they going to do anything at all? Are they going to, are they going to conduct their own investigation, which to me I don't think is really going to yield anything significant because the FBI obviously has the most resources and the kind of the best infrastructure to do something like this. So, I don't know what's going to happen specifically to a guy like Zion Williamson. I guess he's going to be less likely to get punished than some of these schools that have been prominently mentioned, specifically a school like Louisville, where you have evidence coming out that, they had assistant coaches making payments after they were already put on probation. I don't think the NCAA is going to take too kindly to that information. So, a lot of names have been mentioned, even before the trial started. Romeo's name was on the list of guys who could potentially be brought up in the trial. Obviously, there's not been a written record of everything that's been talked about, but I haven't really seen much come from that. So, I think the NCAA is going to have, once this is over, the focus shifts to them. And what are they going to do? Are they going to do anything? I don't think there's a lot of confidence after kind of this Rice Commission coming out. People kind of mock that, I think, for good reason in a lot of ways, and I just don't know that there's a lot of confidence among those who follow the sport closely that anything significant or anything tangible is going to come out of all this, sadly. I just think that's kind of where we are at this point.
Yeah, and as I read the stories and try to follow it somewhat, it seems to me that in some cases the head coaches have managed to insulate themselves from any impropriety by having their assistants do it. That's one thing that I think may be going on. The other thing, I understand there's other wiretaps, other text messages that have been sealed by the judge because he has ruled they are not pertinent to the case that's being tried at the moment. And I saw a question this morning, will those be given to the NCAA after this is all over? And what, if anything, could come out of that as far as other schools, other names, other coaches, and so on that might be involved? So I think there's some more things coming.
Yeah, I mean, the confusing part to me, and I've read this a couple of different places from people that have been covering the trial. There's only a couple, handful of guys that have been there, but I think all of them have basically said that the NCAA has had little presence at the trial, if any. And to me, that's a little bit odd considering the circumstances. You would think they would want to have representatives there just to kind of have a feel for what's going on and try to glean any information that they can from what's being said by everybody. But from everything I've gathered, they haven't done that. So that's the whole, you know, the weird thing to me about the whole situation is I just don't see that much of an effort on the NCAA's part to really change anything. Like they do this commission and they talk about punishing schools, but really this is what, been a year now since this all came out. What really has changed in the sport? Not a whole lot.
No, absolutely not. I think the NCAA is taking the Sergeant Schultz of Hogan the Hero approach. If I know nothing, I know nothing. So
right.
It's kind of, you know, it seems like that's the way it's going. And the one thing that I certainly don't know college coaches. So, I mean, I have nothing really to base this on, but surely there are some honest, by-the-rules coaches at the Division I level out there.
Right. I agree with that. I think the main problem here is the model is not easily changed to something different. It would take a pretty drastic shift to figure out how to change things. So it almost feels like, and you know, we had a podcast earlier this week where we talked about my dad with this, and he kind of said, which I agree with, it's almost like the people who are in charge now are just kind of kicking the can down the road, right? And they're going to wait for somebody else maybe 20 years in the future to really have to step up and fix this. But a lot of the people who are decision makers and can actually affect change, you know, they're the ones that are profiting the most off of this. And so if the model is going to change, these aren't the people that are going to be leading that change because they have too much invested in this, right? They're making money off of the TV contracts. If all of a sudden they have to start dipping into their pockets to start paying athletes or change the model significantly, that's going to cut into that. So that was one of the things I talked about, and I tweeted about this, was Jim Delaney last week, the Big Ten commissioner at Big Ten Media Day, was, you know, he took the podium, and not surprisingly, every question that he got was about this. And the last question he was asked was about paying players, and he basically, without saying he doesn't want to pay players, he sounded totally disinterested in the topic. And to me, you know, he's one of the more powerful guys in college sports. I mean, he was the head of the curve with the Big Ten Network, and that's really helped all these Big Ten schools. He's been at the forefront of a lot of things in college sports. And when you hear someone with his influence and his power basically saying that, you know, we're in the business of education and student athletes and all this stuff, it's like, are you really in that business? Are you in the business of making, you know, your money from your TV deals with Fox and ESPN and all these different things you have? So maybe I'm cynical, but I just don't have any confidence that anything's going to change. And unless something does change with the model where you kind of bring this black market of paying kids into the open to where we can actually see what's going on, I just don't see how anything is going to change. I mean, you're still going to have guys cutting deals on the side because they can't go straight to the NBA. Now, maybe that changes eventually if the model with the NBA changes, but until that happens, it's just there's too much money at stake. There's too much, too many, you know, coaches who are whose livelihoods depend on getting these players that these things are going to continue to go on.
Yeah, and it's if you look at it from a perspective of the fans, things are pretty good. A lot of the schools
right.
are filling their gymnasiums for the games, and they're making money, and the fans are happy, and you know the tournament on TV is better than it's ever been. And from you know having one station or a couple of stations doing games to having so many stations that I can't keep track of which game's on which station anymore, but they're all available on
right.
TV anymore to watch. So it just keeps growing and getting bigger. And I don't know who's a strong enough personality to come in and rock the boat a little bit when things are like that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't actually have a problem. I agree with you. I think the game's in great shape. I like college basketball as a sport. I think overall it's a lot of fun to watch. Where I have a problem is when you have guys like Mike Krzyzewski and Roy Williams coming out saying they've never heard of any of this stuff happening or that. I mean, like, it's almost like they're talking to the general public, the people that cover the sport, like they're idiots. I mean, anyone that knows, I mean, we all saw the movie Blue Chips, right? We all kind of know that there's been this seedy underbelly of college sports for a long time. It's not just a college basketball thing. I'm sure it goes on in college football, too. When you have, you know, two of the most prominent coaches in the country, you know, Mike Krzyzewski saying that this is just a little blip, and Roy Williams talking about how he's never heard of the players getting paid. It's man, I mean, I guess they must think that we're all idiots and are going to listen to whatever they say, but it's, to me, that's one of the more disappointing and discouraging things, because those guys, if they're really about the right things and the health of the game, they should be speaking up more than anyone else.
Absolutely. I have one final question for you. I was doing some research for the show today and looking at the IU roster, and I noticed they have 17 players on the roster. They can only have 13 scholarship players, I believe. So who are the four that aren't on scholarship at Indiana? I'm figuring Jaeger is one of them, and Blackman
mm-hmm.
is one. Quentin
Taylor.
Okay.
And Zach McRoberts.
So okay.
Those are the four.
Faintly remembered Roberts when he transferred from Vermont, was not on
mm-hmm.
scholarship. So, and if I'm not mistaken, his family, his dad's maybe a doctor or something. That.
Well, his brother played in the NBA, too, for
okay.
a long time and made $40 or $50 million. So I don't think they're, I don't know about his parents, but he's one that definitely, based on his play last year, deserves a scholarship.
Well, that's what threw me off.
You know, I think he came under the to Indiana, obviously under Tom Crean, kind of under the pretense that he was a walk-on, and generally those situations work, like if there's a scholarship available, then you're going to get one, but if there's not, then you're going to kind of stay status quo, and I don't think there's any issue there probably from his family side of being able to pay for that education, and so Indiana's kind of got a little bonus there. They've got, in my mind, 14 guys on the roster that could compete for minutes. So that'll be up to the coaching staff to figure this out. But there's probably going to be two or three guys throughout the season who aren't very happy with their minutes, and they'll either have to improve their performance or they will continue to remain unhappy at the end of the bench.
I understand. And it seemed like every school, I think Purdue's the only one that had 13 names on their roster in the Big Ten schools I checked. Almost everybody had 16, 15 names on their roster. So, quite
common. Purdue actually gave the, I think his last name is Luce. Is that
yeah.
the kid that, from Jeff's, that's
yes.
a walk-on?
Yes, it is.
He actually got a scholarship this year because they didn't have the full complement of scholarship players. So good for him being in the right place at the right time, do the right things, and that's not a bad deal if you can get that kind of opportunity.
Absolutely. Alex, enjoyed, as always, talking to you this morning, and good luck.
All right, thank you.
All right, Alex Bozich of Inside the Hall. Stop in to CC Power Sports with locations in Clarksville and Southern Jefferson County for parts, vehicle sales, and all servicing needs for street and off-road motorcycles, side-by-sides, ATVs, and personal watercraft. Summer is almost over, but fall is an excellent time to ride as well. So visit CC Power Sports and let the fun begin. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll have Matt Weaver of Pigs.com, who covers IU football, find out a little bit about the Hoosiers and their game this Saturday at Penn State. We'll be back here with the Hoosier Report on WXVW.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And welcome back to the Hoosier Report on this Thursday. Lee Kelly sitting in for Matt Dennison. Next up on the program in segment three, Matt Weaver of Pigs.com, who covers IU football. And good morning, Matt.
Good morning. How you guys doing?
So far, so good. Matt, let me ask you right off the bat, what went wrong against Iowa last Saturday?
Well, it was a baffling game for me because, you know, we obviously don't have a huge sample size with Tom Allen as the head coach, but in about a year and a half, the one thing you can always count on with his team is they play with an edge. They play incredibly hard. They really bring it every week, and they didn't do that Saturday. I mean, obviously you have mistakes. You have those in every game, and you have missed, you know, where you don't execute. But it was more than that. They just were flat. I mean, they didn't bring it. They didn't play with that edge that you're used to seeing. So to me, that was the biggest concern, more than some of the mistakes they made, missed tackles and penalties and that kind of stuff. I think it all kind of goes back to they just weren't. I don't want to say fired up, but they just did not seem to be into that game from the get go.
And as a result of that game, there was a players' meeting, I believe, on Monday. Sometimes players' meetings are called by players. Sometimes players' meetings are called by the coaches through a couple of players. So, what have you heard about that meeting, how it came about, and any wording coming out of that meeting about anything that might have been said or the emphasis placed on that meeting?
Well, Coach Allen actually talked about it a little bit last night on his radio show, and the players were the ones who suggested the meeting. It was actually Jacob Robinson, who is a senior D tackle. Now, Jacob's been hurt for a few weeks with a knee injury, but he is you know, one of the leaders of the team. And from what Coach Allen said, he approached him and asked him if he could speak. Every Monday they have a team meeting. So that's there in itself is not anything new. But obviously when you have the players, you know, come and approach you to speak in the meeting, you know, basically what he said, he didn't divulge exactly what they talked about, but it was basically the seniors got up and, you know, I think they just kind of told the team, you know, this is what we need to get back to. This is what we need to do. And this is what is expected. This is our standard. It was one of those things where they're just, you know, you have a young team. I mean, it's not to make excuses, but the fourth youngest team in the Big Ten, I think the 15th or 16th youngest team in the nation. So, you know, sometimes with young players, when things go bad, they're not really sure how to cope. They don't know how to bounce back because it's so new to them. So I think it was a good move by Jacob and the other seniors, and hopefully it pays off.
I heard some talk during the broadcast or right after the game by a couple of people about maybe it's time to switch quarterbacks. First time I had heard that. But any talk about changing quarterbacks and if that would help or not?
No, I mean, they keep saying that, you know, Coach Allen keeps saying Michael Penix will play again this year, which he will because he's only played in two games. And if you're gonna play a true freshman – and try to, and at the very least, use the redshirt rule, then you're going to play him in all four games. So he'll at least play two more times. When that'll be, you know, I'm sure they maybe have a plan, but, you know, they're not going to tell us. I'm not so much in favor initially switching quarterbacks. I would just like to see Michael Penix play more because he adds something that Peyton Ramsey doesn't, and that's the ability to really stretch the field. He's got a big arm. He can make some throws that Peyton Ramsey struggles to make, and that's why I wouldn't bench Peyton Ramsey. I don't even know if I would have Michael Penix be the starter, but I would not be opposed to a two-quarterback system where you get Michael Penix some snaps and see what he can do.
And from Iowa last Saturday, all they have to do now is travel to Penn State this Saturday, a team that's been beaten at home, I think, the last 2 weeks. So this is a tough one to move into on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, Penn State, they lost at home, obviously. I mean, the Ohio State game, which was a terrific game. Then they had the bye week. Then they come out of the bye week, and they lose at home to Michigan State in a game. I mean, I didn't get to see a lot of it because, obviously, we were working and covering the IU game. But, it looked like they gave up a touchdown in the very last seconds, kind of a heartbreaking loss. And so then they come here on Saturday, and you know, they're wounded, they're talented, and they're probably going to be really, really annoyed at how things are going, because they're done in the playoff picture. They're probably done in the Big Ten race as far as trying to win the East. So now they're just playing for wins, and you know, they're going to want to take out some frustration this weekend at Indiana.
You know, this is the time of the season when normally it seems like Indiana's injuries begin to stack up, and a lot of the first-teamers are on the sidelines watching, and IU has trouble competing against the top-level teams with the second and third string players. What about injuries so far this season for the Hoosiers?
They're not. I mean, they probably have a few more than they would like, but I mean, that's really the case with a lot of teams. They're actually not, you know, at least compared to years past, in my opinion, they're a lot better. I mean, obviously, I mentioned Jacob Robinson, who's a big loss. He's a starting D tackle, you know, not a superstar player, but one of those steady guys that you know what you're going to get every week from him. Luke Timian had been out for about three games. He came back against Iowa. Wap Filior has been out for a few games. I think there's a good chance he plays this week based on what we've heard. You know, I think other than that, I don't think there's any other really significant injuries. Those would be the biggest ones. You know, offensively, they're relatively healthy on the O-line, and I mean, I'm sure they're nicked and bruised and banged up like a lot of guys are, but nothing of significance. And then, you know, D-line, I mentioned Jacob Robinson, linebacker. I think T.D. Roof's a little bit banged up. He's a backup outside linebacker. But all in all, at this point in the season, especially after you played Ohio State, Michigan State, Iowa, three of the more physical teams that you're going to play, I think they're doing relatively well. Now, you still got five games to go, and you got a bye week in a few weeks, so hopefully you can get to that bye week fairly healthy, and anybody that needs to rest up can get rested up during that week.
What are your thoughts right now on IU making a bowl game this season? You still feel very positive about it, or kind of wavering right there on the fence?
Well, I don't think, I mean, listen, after seven games, I don't think Indiana is not where anybody thought they would be. I mean, 4-3, I think, is probably what a lot of people predicted. I thought they had a chance at 5-2 if they could steal one against either Michigan State or Iowa. Obviously that didn't happen. But you're right where you need to be. Obviously, Penn State's going to be really tough. Even if you play a very good game, they're going to be hard to beat. The talent disparity is still there. You know, I think Indiana, you know, I'll be surprised if they're not competitive like they were a couple weeks ago at Ohio State this week. I think this team will come out, and I think they will bring it this weekend. But let's just assume they lose and you're 4-4. To me, you know, I don't want to say the season's riding on the Minnesota game, but there's a lot on that game. Than that, then you're in really good shape. You're in really good shape to get a bowl game. You'll have three games to win one, and I think they do it. If you drop this one and you drop Minnesota, boy, you're really putting yourself against the wall. It's going to be tough. But they still have a very good chance to make a bowl, but you're starting to get down to the nitty-gritty, and you can't really have too many more slip-ups in games that are kind of maybe toss-ups or winnable games.
And I've one final question, and I've been asked this, and I have no answer for it. I'll pass it along to you. Why can Northwestern and Wisconsin and Iowa produce winning football teams year after year, even though their states do not produce gigantic numbers of D1 football players, and Indiana just struggles to consistently get to a bowl game?
You know, I mean, with Wisconsin and Iowa, I mean, they do have some tradition going back a couple decades. I mean, there was a time when Wisconsin was one of the worst teams in the Big Ten, and Barry Alvarez turned it around, and he put a system in place, and now, you know, they just kind of plug and play.
Iowa's kind of the same thing. Obviously, Hayden Fry won there, and Kirk Ferentz has continued to do a great job. Northwestern is an interesting one because they not only have the lack of tradition like Indiana's, but they also have the academic requirements that make it tougher to get players in there. With them, I think they've got one of the best coaches in college football. I think Pat Fitzgerald is a phenomenal coach. I mean, I want to say they got lucky, but you got a little bit lucky. I mean, if he's not a Northwestern grad and didn't have the ties to university, you probably aren't able to hire him if you're Northwestern. So there's some, there was some good fortune there. I mean, it's just, you got it. There's got to be a commitment to football. And I think the commitment from Indiana is better, but it's still got to keep going because other programs are paying their staffs more. They're investing in facilities more, and you got to keep up with that if you want to be competitive and you want to start winning. You got to string together some winning seasons, and then hopefully it kind of takes off. But to me, the biggest reason why Indiana has struggled in football for decades and decades and decades is there has not been a sincere, legitimate commitment to this program from the administration.
And you think they're getting it somewhat now, having a commitment as far as facilities and a little better coaching salaries and hiring the right people to come in and coach under whoever the head coach may be?
I think they are. Now, Indiana still has, I mean, Tom Allen is the lowest paid coach in the Big Ten, and their staff, the pool of money for their staff is the lowest in the Big Ten. I'm not saying paying Tom Allen more makes him a better coach because it doesn't, but, you know, it shows a commitment. That's the one area I would like to see them allocate more money towards the coaching staff. Maybe he would hire the same coaches. I have no idea, but you at least give him the option if he wants to make changes, if he wants to go in and bring in some, you know, really good offensive coordinator. If, let's say, Mike DeBoer retires in a year or two and you want to go get some hot young guy, you got the resources to do it. I do think the commitment's better. I think it still needs to get to keep getting better, but it's definitely better than it was, you know, when I was a manager there under Cam Cameron years ago. I mean, the commitment back then was not good. It's a lot better. The facilities are definitely way improved. The stadium looks fantastic. They've done a great job with that. But you can't go to a certain point and be like, okay, we're done. It's every year. Every year you got to do something to, you know, they do it with basketball. You got to do it with football too. Every year there's got to be a little bit done. Maybe not a huge new facility or a bunch of money poured in, but every year something's got to be done to show that commitment to the program.
All right. Matt, thank you very much for joining us this morning, and enjoy the game this weekend. Hopefully there'll be a lot to enjoy.
Thank you. You guys have a great weekend.
All right. Matt Weaver of Pigs.com with us this morning. We'll be back. We'll sum up the football sectional games coming up tomorrow night in the opening round of the Indiana High School Football Sectionals right after these messages here on WXVW.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
You know, a basketball hero around here is treated like a god.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
You know, most people would kill to be treated like a god just for a few moments.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And Lee Kelly sitting in for Matt Dennison on this Thursday edition. I'll be back with you tomorrow morning. Matt will be back with you on Monday. We're going to talk a little bit about the high school football playoffs that start tomorrow night here in Indiana. This segment brought to you by Zaxby's. Tackle your hunger with Zaxby's. Try one of our sandwich meals like the grilled chicken sandwich meal. All sandwich meals include crinkle fries and a 22-ounce drink. Zaxby's, a proud sponsor of high school football on the Big X Sports Radio. Well, let's take a look at the games. In 5A, Columbus East will be back at New Albany. They visited earlier this year, had a close call, winning by 1 point over New Albany, and they'll be back in town. Bob Gaddis has been at Columbus East for 18 years. He is averaging almost 11 victories a season. Quite a performance by Bob Gaddis as the head coach at Columbus East. It's going to be a tough road to go for New Albany. The predictions are coming out in favor of Columbus East. That's what you would expect. Every other team in that sectional hoping New Albany can pull off a win, opening that sectional up even more than it is. So Columbus East at New Albany. Silver Creek travels to Scottsburg. It should be a semi-easy game for Silver Creek. Scottsburg's in a rebuilding year, and John Dablo has the Dragons playing excellent football again here in 2018. Charlestown is at Salem, and Charlestown 7-2 on the year, while Salem at 5-4. However, that game, while Charlestown beat them handily the last time they met, 37-14, that was back on October 5th. You always have to worry about the kids taking a game like that for granted when the victory was so recent. So keep an eye on Charlestown at Salem. Switzerland County at 5-4 comes in to meet the Providence Pioneers. They are on a 7-game win streak, and it looks like they'll have an easy time in this one if they play like they have been playing. Mitchell at 5-4. Troy Pritchett has that team playing well. They will be at Clarksville, which is on the doorstep of another season without a victory. They are 0-9 on the year. Doesn't look good for Friday night as well. And Eastern Green, the team that won it all last year, at 5-3 this year, will play Rock Creek Academy. Rock Creek playing in their first ever tournament game, the first year they are eligible. So it looks like Rock Creek going to have a rough first game in the sectional. So those are the games that are coming up locally tomorrow night. A lot of great games around the state. There are some teams that have byes. Floyd Central Bedford will have the night off, and that sectional. New Albany and East, the only two teams in that sectional that will be playing tomorrow night, and then everybody else will get underway the following week as the tournament moves along. So high school football getting around. You've got the cross-country semi-state going on at Brown County on Saturday, and you have soccer semi-states going on as well. Fall sports wrapping up here in Indiana, and so it will be football starting tomorrow night. They will end the Saturday of Thanksgiving weekend with games in Indianapolis at Lucas Oil Stadium. And if you've never been, even though you may not have a team in it, go one time just to enjoy the atmosphere of sitting in Lucas Oil and watching some outstanding football. Again, that's Thanksgiving weekend, Friday and Saturday, for those games. Again, I want to thank Matt Dennison and the station for allowing me to sit in this morning. I'll be back with you tomorrow morning. Matt will be back on Monday here on the Hoosier Report on WXVW, and we'll talk tomorrow morning a little more about high school football as well as other things going on here in the Hoosier State. Thank you for joining me this morning on the Hoosier Report.